this week nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy suspense. But first, on the lighter side, it's the Jack Benny program. In 1932, Benny was a stage headliner when columnist Ed Sullivan asked him to appear on a CBS interview program. Eventually, he was given his own show, premiering on NBC Blue in May of 1932. Mary Livingston was created in the first 2 years when a script that needed a young female fan crashing the Benny show after auditioning actresses for the part, Benny gave it to his wife. Eddie Anderson, the gravel-voiced black comic who became known to the world as Rochester, was originally signed for a one-shot appearance as a Pullman porter for the Easter Sunday show of 1937. But Anderson was so popular that Benny brought him back again and again and finally had him written into the program permanently as chauffeur and valet. On CBS, Benny continued in his 7 p.m. Sunday format until May 1955, his last live broadcast on radio. Reruns of the show continued until 1958. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with the Jack Benny program and special guest star Fred Allen from March of 1938. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Jello program, starring Jack Benny with Abe Lyman and his orchestra, coming to you from Radio City, New York. The orchestra opens the program with I Double Dare You. I Double Dare You, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you a man who traveled all the way from California to New York. The gypsy of the airwaves, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Harry. Hello again. This is Jack Benny, your little nomad talking. And Harry Von Zell, I want to tell you right now how much I appreciate your helping me out tonight. It's a grand gesture.
Oh, well, don't mention it, Jack. I only hope I'll be able to fill Don Wilson's shoes.
What was that?
I said I hope I can fill Don Wilson's shoes.
Oh, you can, Harry, but don't ever get into his pants without a compass. You should see that guy.
I'll bet. Well, tell me, Jack, what kind of a trip did you have to New York? Did you fly in?
No, Harry, I took one of those new streamlined trains, and believe me, they are classy. I mean, they're the last word in luxury.
Yes, so I heard. They tell me the service is marvelous.
Oh, it is. And although I think they overdo it a little bit.
They do?
Yes. I didn't mind when the conductor sent me gardenias. But when the porter tucked me in my berth and sang Rock-a-bye Baby, I thought that was going too far. And the candy vendor, was he ritzy?
He was ritzy, eh?
You should have heard him. He walked up and down the aisle yelling candy, peanuts, popcorn, and annuities. I tell you, Harry, it's absolute... pardon me a minute. Hello? Who? No, I'm sorry, miss. Phil Harris didn't come to New York with me. What? No, I can't run home and get him. Goodbye. That's all I've heard from every girl in town. Phil Harris. Well, anyway, Harry, it looks like we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. And I don't know whether you know it or not, but your boss, Fred Allen, is coming up here.
Oh, he is? Say, yeah. That's funny. He told me he was going to an egg roll.
An egg roll? Well, maybe that's what he thinks this is.
And... Hiya, Jekyll boy. Welcome to New York.
Oh, hello, Lyman. How are you? Well, little Lord Fauntleroy is with us.
Say,
oh,
Jack.
Well. Yeah?
I want to thank you very much for inviting me up here tonight and letting me come on your program. It was doggone sweet of you.
Yes, it was. It was. Please try and act like a gentleman tonight, not a gorilla.
Don't worry, Jack. I made up my mind to behave myself. I'm a changed guy.
Well, that suits me. I'm glad to hear it.
Here, Jack, just to show you my heart's in the right place, I brought you a bouquet of flowers.
What, you brought me what?
A bouquet of flowers.
Flowers?
Hey, wait a minute, Jack. Drop that bouquet.
What's wrong?
I saw Abe put a tarantula in it.
A tarantula?
Yeah.
Why, those things are deadly. Why, Abe Lyman, that's positively the worst thing I've ever heard of.
Well, gee, I only did it for a laugh.
A laugh? What a sense of humor. You're the kind of a guy that would give your grandmother a hot foot.
I do, and she loves it.
You and your practical jokes. Say, Harry, you know what Lyman did to me last summer in Hollywood?
What?
I was nice enough to invite him to my house for the weekend, and he put a shark in my swimming pool.
He did?
Yes. I thought it was a rubber one until I started missing toes. How do you like that for a trick?
That was one of my best gags.
Yeah. Well, look, Abe, just attend to your music tonight and keep away from me. Come in. Oh, how do you do?
Greetings, Mr. Benny. I don't think we've ever met before. My name is Ripley.
Oh, Bob Ripley, the Believe It or Not Man. Well, it was nice of you to drop in, Mr. Ripley. What can I do for you?
Well, Jack, you know I'm always on the lookout for curiosities of all kinds.
Yes, yes, yes. I never miss your program, your cartoons, either. What's on your mind?
Well, I would just like to get a few angles on you and your work.
Oh, I see. Well, go right ahead.
Now, first, Is it true that when you make a picture, you wear a silver fox toupee?
Yes, yeah, but only on special occasions. See, as a rule, I wear a subdued fright wig.
Well, I see. Now, another thing. You're a musician, aren't you?
Yeah, around Carnegie Hall, I'm known as Yasha. There.
Is it true that the strings on your violin were made of the tail of a wildcat who later committed suicide?
Well, he didn't commit suicide, but he is wilder than ever, Bob.
One more question, Jack.
I see.
I understand that you have been recently chosen as one of the best-dressed men in America. Is that right?
Yes, I cannot deny that, Bob.
Well, is that suit you're wearing now a sample of your taste in clothes?
Well, of course, don't go by this. This is just a little lounging outfit.
Oh, you mean you look better if you were lying down.
Yes, but it isn't fair to judge me by this suit. Really, Mr. Ripley, you'd love my soup and fish.
Oh, I see. You cook, too.
I was talking about my formal attire. Are there any more questions?
No. Believe it or not, I think I've got all I need. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Would you like a picture of me, Mr. Ripley?
Not unless you've got three arms. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, Harry, Ripley seems to be a nice chap, although his questions were rather embarrassing. Now, what would I do with three arms?
Well, you could play your violin and hold your nose at the same time.
I could also punch you in the eye with that one, huh? Well, let's get on with the show. And now, folks, our conductor, Abraham Lyman, will play, what's it going to be, Abe?
Here, it's written in this little book. Open it and read it.
Why don't you read it yourself?
If I could read, I'd get my own program.
Oh, that's right, huh?
Go ahead and open it.
Okay. Ouch! My finger!
Ah, I knew I'd get you with that mousetrap gag.
Fine, I had to come to New York for that. Now play your number and leave me alone.
Okay.
Hold it a minute, Abe. Come in.
Well, how are you, old boy? Glad to see you. Say, you're a sight for sore eyes.
Well, I...
Believe me, it's like old times again. Yes, sir. Say, you put a little weight, haven't you?
Oh, a little. You know, this is rather embarrassing, but I just can't seem to place you.
Funny, I can't place you either. Goodbye.
Play, Phil, or Abe. Why don't I stay home where I belong? I was Hallelujah, played by Abe Lyman, a cut-up if there ever was one. I hate to admit it, Abe, but it sounded all right. Say, your orchestra has changed a little. I see some new faces in there.
Yes, Jack, and I'd like to have you meet some of the boys. Huh? This is my first violinist, Monsieur the Mug.
Oh, hello, Monsieur.
Hi, Toots.
And Jack, this is my piano player, Machine Gun Stokowski.
My, what name? Say, Abe, who's that new saxophone player over there?
You mean Butch?
Yes, yes. I noticed he was scribbling on a piece of paper all during the last number. What was that for?
Well, every month he has to write a letter to the parole board.
Well, that's sweet of him to remember. Say, Harry, that's a nice bunch of boys Abe has here, huh?
Yes, they are. They all came in cabs, which they drove.
Oh, well, thanks anyway, Harry. You tried.
Well, what do we do now, Jack?
Well, Harry, if I was in Hollywood right now doing this program just about this time, Mary would walk in and say...
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Why, Kate... Why, Kate Smith, you little lifesaver. Well, Kate, you couldn't have walked in at a more opportune time. Am I glad to see you?
I'm glad to see you, too, Jack. Are you having a good time in New York?
Oh, wonderful. Kate, you know Harry Von Zell.
Oh, sure. Hello, Harry.
Glad to see you, Kate.
And this is our temporary maestro, Abe Lyman.
Yes, I've met Mr. Lyman before.
Sure. Hello, Smitty.
Abe, don't mind him, Kate. He's a little on the rough side.
Well, that's all right. We'll get along all right, Jack. Hiya, slats.
Well, I'm glad you're taking it the right way. And I must tell you how much I've enjoyed your programs, Kate. They've been grand.
Thank you, Jack.
By the way, Mary told me that as soon as I saw you, to give you her love and a great big kiss.
How about Phil Harris?
There you go, just like the rest of them. Huh? No kidding. What do all you girls see in Phil?
Well, he's handsome, charming, suave.
Debonair.
Debonair? Why, Abe, where'd you learn that word, huh?
Well, I was reading a book one day and stubbed my eye on it.
I thought so. Well, anyway, Kate, how about that kiss Mary wanted me to give you? Now, come on. Come on, Kate.
None of your lip, Benny.
All right, but you don't know what you're missing. You know, Kate, I'm a leading man in Hollywood.
Well, I'll see you there sometime.
It's a date. You can always find me on Vine Street right in front of the Owl Drugstore.
Say, I meant to tell you, Jack. Mary sent me a letter yesterday, and it's all about you. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, no, don't bother.
Yeah, let's hear it, Kate. Come on.
Oh, it's probably nothing.
Well, here it is anyhow.
Oh,
dear Kate. Glad to hear that you're taking my place. But as this is the first time you've ever worked with Jack, there are some things that every girl should know.
It starts out bad there.
If Jack asks you out to dinner and tells you there's a marvelous floor show at the Automat, don't fall for it.
Isn't that awful?
However, if you do go out to a nightclub with Jack and he asks you to dance with him, say no. As he'll want to roll up his pants and do the minuet.
That's very funny there.
Give my love to all, and I'll be sitting in front of my radio waiting for your song.
That's a sweet ending anyway. Well, Kate, you are going to sing a number for us, aren't you?
You bet I am. Would you like to hear This Time It's Real?
Yes, sir. Abe, give Miss Smith a melodious background with feeling, harmony, and a nice smooth rhythm.
Oh, you mean I should be debonair?
Yes, and tell your guitar player to put his shoes on. Sing, Kate, debonair yet.
Nothing where love was concerned. I'm through with all confusion, for now I've learned. I know it. This time it's real. It's thrilling, so thrilling, the way I feel. Love before was different. I just played a part. But this time it comes right from my heart. Pretending is ending this time. know it. This time it's real. Forever and ever.
This Time It's Real, sung by Kate Smith, accompanied by Debonair and his orchestra. And Kate, I must say that you sang just as good for Jell-O as you do for Calumet baking powder and Swan's Down cake flour. Gee, a double feature there. You know, Kate, I would like to reciprocate in some way. Is there anything I can do for you while I'm in town?
Oh, no, Jack. Thanks just the same.
But you've been so sweet, Kate, I insist.
Well, all right. If it'll make you any happier, you can buy me an ermine wrap.
Well, I'll do that. And now, hey, wait a minute, you mean real ermine?
Of course, Jack.
Well, Kate, I'd run right out and buy you one, except today is Sunday and every place is closed.
I can get one of my boys to open the store for you.
Quiet. Anyway, don't worry about it, Kate. I'll make up for it some way, you
Sorry,
know.
Jack.
Oh, pardon me. Hello? Hollywood calling? Yes, yeah, this is Jack Benny. I'll take it. Hello? Oh, hello, Kenny. It's Kenny Baker. Well, Kenny, how are you, kid? What? No, no, Kenny. She's not taking your place. Look, Kate Smith is a star on her own program. What? Why doesn't she stay on it? Now, Kenny. I'm sorry, Kate. Now, listen, Kenny, I don't want to discuss it with you any further. I'll see you when I get home. What? Yes, yes, I'll bring you one. Now, hang up. Goodbye. What a kid.
What does he want?
Oh, the little copycat. He wants an ermine wrap, too. I hope what he said didn't offend you, Kate. Huh?
Oh, no. I think he's one of the cutest little brats in the world.
Yeah.
Well, Jack.
Yeah?
I'm afraid I'll have to run along now. Thanks so much for inviting me up here.
Well, it's been an honest-to-goodness treat, and I'll never forget it.
Huh? Good evening, Mr. Benny. Were you looking for me?
Yes, Rochester. Just a minute. Well, goodbye, Kate, and thanks again so much.
Thank you, Jack. So long, and it's been a pleasure.
You're welcome, Father. Well, Rochester, I haven't seen you since we got off the train 4 days ago. Where were you?
I've been weekending up in Harlem. We had a gin barbecue.
Fine. I had to do all my own unpacking. What do you think I brought you along for?
You didn't say.
You're supposed to be working for me, and you spend all your time in Harlem. Suppose you went to all the hot spots.
There ain't no cool ones there.
Never mind. Now, look, Rochester, go right over to the Waldorf Astoria and straighten up my suite.
Did you move them to YMCA?
Rochester! I just went there for a swim. Now, run along.
Yes, sir. Oh, say, boss.
What?
I'm having a little financial recession. Mm-hmm. I wonder if I could have an advance on my salary.
Look, I already gave you an advance.
I want something in advance of that.
Oh, all right, here's $5.
Could you elevate that to $8.50?
$8.50, what for?
I promised to buy my gal a sun lamp.
All right, here you are. Now, don't forget, Rochester. Rochester, we're leaving Tuesday, so be sure and be up at my hotel. Come in. Well, look who's here. Come on in, Fred.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm certainly surprised to see so many of you in here. It's not raining outside, is it?
No, it's not raining, Fred. These people are all here to see me.
And you're not giving away dishes or anything?
No, sir, it's just me.
Now, look, Jack, you couldn't draw a crowd as big as this if you were a gutter on New Year's Eve.
Well, Oh, I couldn't, eh? Now, listen, Fred, you're here to work, so take off your coat and let's go.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Before we start this Punch and Benny show, there's something we've got to straighten out right now.
What's that, Fred?
I'm not going to open my mouth on this program, except to yawn, until you give me what you promised me.
What I promised you?
You know, don't play possum, Benny. Now, hand over that Boy Scout knife.
Oh, yeah, I knew you'd remember that. All right, here it is. Wait till I take the chain off.
I want the knife, chain, and everything that goes with it.
Oh, I suppose you even want this elk's tooth.
No, you can put that back in your mouth.
Well, here's the knife, Fred. Take it and consider our deal closed.
Now, wait a minute. You're not rushing me into this. I want to see if it's in good condition first. Here's the big blade. There's the corkscrew.
Yeah.
There's the fingernail file. There's the ping pong paddle. There's the bottle opener. Hey, what's this thing here?
That's a folding bed. Are you satisfied?
Well, I guess it's all right. Say, Jack, have you, my mood changes here.
I see.
Jack, have you... I'm on the air.
The scripts can go from now on. I see.
It's too late. It should have gone before.
That's right. That's right.
Jack... Have you been having a good time in New York? Have you seen any shows or anything?
Yes, Fred. I saw the Ed Wynn show. That was swell. I saw George M. Cohn show. That was grand. And then I saw your picture. Well.
Well, what about it?
Nothing, Fred, but if you got paid for that picture, and I think you did, you should split 50-50 with Santa Claus.
Now, look, Jack, if you're referring to that screen triumph, Sally, Irene, and Alan, that picture... The studio forgot to put me in it. I just put
myself.
Yes,
I know.
That picture is funnier than Don Wilson thinks you are.
Is that so? Did you ever hear yourself enjoy you?
No, but I'm having my mirror wired for sound. I'll get around to it. You're jealous. That's what's the matter with you.
Jealous?
Buddy.
Well, I made a picture last year called Artists and Models that was a sensation. I got 85 belly laughs.
I'll say you did. You should have pulled in your stomach, too. It was terrible.
My stomach had nothing to do with it. It was my performance. And at least I photographed well.
Oh, I suppose I didn't.
Listen, Fred, I saw a sweepstake winner in a newsreel yesterday that looked better than you did. And he was selling fish at the time.
Artisan models. What were you in that celluloid omelet? An artist or a model?
I was an easel, Smarty.
An easel?
Yes.
How can a weasel play an easel?
Now, listen,
say, I just thought of a swell twist. We should have said a schlemiesel. That would have fixed it.
That would have been better here, yes. It would have helped here.
Well, might as well do it now, as long as we're here.
Now, listen, Fred, listen.
Shall I slice him down, Mr. Benny?
Never mind, Rochester.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Who is this Swami here?
Swami?
I'm Mr. Benny's butler.
Butler, hey? Well, listen to me, you Ethiopian Jeeves. One more word out of you, and you'll be butling in the shroud.
Don't let him scare you, Rochester.
I ain't scared.
That's the stuff.
Wait a minute. What is a shroud?
A shroud, my untutored friend, is a windbreaker for a ghost.
Uh-uh, make way for a coward.
Rochester, you see, Fred, and I'll probably have to get a new butler.
Well, hello there, Fred.
Well, Harry Von Zell, what are you doing over here in the enemy's camp?
Well, I came here to help Jack out tonight. He needed an announcer.
Oh, is he going to pay you?
Certainly not. He's doing it as a favor. Of course, I will buy him a necktie or something, Fred.
What do you mean, something?
Something cheaper and shut up.
Well, I thought so. Benny, you're so tight, you've not only got the first dollar you ever earned, you've got the guy's right arm that handed it to you.
Well, it was loose. Now, let me tell you something, Alan.
Hey, pipe down, fellas. You're upsetting me.
Are we bothering you, Abe?
Yes, we
woke
him up.
Yeah, why don't you two guys... be debonair.
Debonair. He's
not. If you say debonair once more, I'm going to ask you what it means.
Now, wait a minute. He's not saying debonair. He's got a ventriloquist with him here. He's not. But you're going to ask him what it means. Will you know if his answer is correct?
Don't worry about me, Fred. I know plenty of big words.
Now, listen, you itinerant buffoon. The only big word you know is your right name.
Well, what if I did reduce it a little? My right name wasn't so long.
It wasn't, eh? Why, your name was so long, it took 15 minutes to write it in shorthand.
Hmm.
And then they had to send the pencil to the Mayo brothers to recuperate.
You should talk. When you were in vaudeville, they had to put your right name on a rubber marquee.
That's vulcanized slander, Benny. Why, you weather-beaten gargoyle.
Hold on there, Mr. B.
I'll throw you out of here so fast you look like a jockey on a skyrocket.
Now, you've gone too far, Benny. One more crack and I'll hit you on top of the head so hard you can tie your shoes with your teeth.
Oh, you will, eh?
Yes, I will. I'm taking my Boy Scout knife and getting out of here.
That's fine. Thanks for coming over, you town hall Buddha.
You're welcome, you Waukegan whippersnapper. Goodbye.
Fine guy. I'm nice enough to invite him up here, and what do I get?
Hey, Jack.
What is it, Abe?
Here's your knife back.
My knife? How'd you get it away from Alan?
My flute player bumped into him.
Oh, boy, that's marvelous. Thanks, Abe.
You want his watch, too?
Never mind, never mind. Play, Abe. This is the last number of the 26th program in the new Jell-O series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time, broadcasting from Hollywood, California. And I want to thank Harry Von Zell, Bob Ripley, Kate Smith, Abe Lyman, and Fred Allen for their cooperation. It was a grand gesture. And now, folks, we... Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
Is the program over yet?
Just about. Say, how did you get to New York, anyhow?
I flew in. I hope I land pretty soon.
Oh, good night, folks.
From March of 1938, it's been the Jack Benny Show featuring guest star Fred Allen. In a moment, suspense with a murderous revision as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, was first heard on CBS in June of 1942, starring Charles Ruggles in The Burning Court. It was on the air for the next 20 years under many talented directors, each bringing his own mark to suspense, making it one of the most diverse, unusually broad-based shows of the era. Suspense dealt with life-or-death situations. That element was usually established within the first few minutes. Then, through characterization and audio coloring, little touches were used to heighten the sensation of impending doom. That was what suspense was all about, the slow tightening of the knot. Suspense was known as the Actors' Theater. People like Cary Grant, Frederick March, Charles Laughton, Humphrey Bogart, Lucille Ball, Olivia de Havilland, Gregory Peck, Peter Lorre, Henry Fonda, and Orson Welles all headed the casts. Many top film stars were asked to return for encore performances. Early in the show, a general format was established and stuck throughout. Suspense opened with a ringing of church bells intermingled with stinging music. By the fall of its first year, Joseph Kearns, the grim-voiced fellow known as the Man in Black, was aboard as narrator. That continued through the Roma Wine years, with Truman Bradley, another of radio's most distinguished voices, doing the commercials. The Man in Black had disappeared by the time the show went to 60 minutes in 1948. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Suspense and the Case of a Murderous Revision, starring Elliot Lewis, from January of 1951. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, a murderous revision. The story about a man who made a recording of a violent death.
What you want to see me for?
Chris, come in. Sit down. Did you get to hear the show Sunday?
I don't like to listen to the show.
Why not?
Because I don't, that's all.
Hey, Mr. Goodman, I put some zip in that closing scene. I want you to hear it. Got the playback ready. Hand me that record mark part two, will you?
Sure.
Thanks. I don't know, Chris. I don't make you come to rehearsals. You don't have to sit in the control room all day. The least you could do is listen to the show at home. Listen to this now.
George. Honest, I didn't mean it, George.
Get this, Chris.
Do you mean to say that you didn't really mean it when you told my brother you didn't love him? You forget, Doris, that I heard you every word while I was hiding behind the Davenport the night my mother was here.
George, I beg you, don't do this thing. Put down the gun, George.
This is only what you deserve. You tricked me for the last time, Doris. You tricked me for the last time.
I'll just shut this up.
What did you change it for? What was wrong with the ending the way it was? Why did you change it?
Now, just take it easy, Chris. I'll tell you why I changed it. Because it was wordy and repetitious. It didn't tell the story. The boys upstairs said that...
Yeah, that's just what I thought. The boys upstairs, they do everything but breathe for you. Did it ever occur to you that maybe people are wordy and repetitious?
Chris, I'm trying to tell you the scene, the way you wrote it, just didn't play.
That's right. All the trade cliches, drag them out. It didn't live. It didn't play. It didn't make the right goosebumps come out of your left elbow. How did you ever get into this business? Who ever let you into a radio station, anyway?
I'll tell you what's wrong with you. What you need is a good psychiatrist.
Don't you tell me I need a psychiatrist. Don't you tell me. Let go of me. I said let go.
You're nuts.
You listen to me. For 2 years now, I've turned out a murder a week for you. Week in and week out, a murder a week. I eat murder, talk murder, dream murder. And for what? Every time I turn in a decent script, you chop the heart out of it.
Your contract is up next week, Chris. You've got only one more script to do. Write it and get out.
You'll get better than a script. You'll get everything you deserve. I'm going to show you what a real murder sounds like. I'm going to show you if I have to kill you to do it. Good evening. This is a recording of an actual murder. The first, as far as I know. Not written, not rehearsed, but well planned. It is respectfully dedicated to Mr. Ken Avery, editor and producer of the radio program Murder, Please. This is my last show, Mr. Avery. I'm delivering it to you in its entirety. Cast, music, everything. The events and persons are absolutely real. It's going to be a great show, Mr. Avery. You will hear everything but the climax. I'm speaking into a microphone concealed in my desk, concealed with the other recording equipment I've rented for the occasion. A special microphone is attached to my telephone to enable the listener to hear both ends of any conversation. The music you hear is coming from a high-fidelity phonograph at my side. This program is produced, edited, directed, narrated, engineered, and plotted by Christopher Turner, whose only claim to immortality is this single half hour. And now, Mr. Avery, the leading characters in order of appearance. The murderer, Christopher Turner. The catalytic agent, your daughter, Lois. The victim, yourself. And now, please to begin. Murder, Please. Ken, this is Chris.
Now listen, Chris.
I hate to bother you at home, but I wanted to apologize for the way I acted. Why don't you drop over to my office right away?
Sorry, Chris, no go. I put up with your little insanities for 2 years now. Temper tantrums, insults, coming in stowed to the gills. 2 years of that was plenty.
I see. You won't change your mind?
Not a chance. Maybe you can find somebody more patient than I am. Good luck.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks a lot. Lovely opening scene, Mr. Avery. Thank you. You did exactly what I wanted you to do. You just threw away your last chance to save your life. Good work. An excellent performance. I kill you in the name of the parasitical breed you represent. The stupid, arrogant men of high places who milk the talent of others and claim it as their own. To you, Mr. Avery. If you won't come up to my office by invitation, which I suspected you wouldn't, there's still another way. The telephone book. Listen, Mr. Avery, the sound of the flipping of the pages. Your daughter's phone number. Ah, here we are. 2, 4, 8.
Hello?
Hello, Lois. It's been a long time. I bet you don't even know who this is.
I don't recognize the voice.
This is Christopher Turner.
Oh, sure, Mr. Turner. How are you?
Fine, just fine. How do you like living alone?
It's all right, I guess.
Rather be living with the folks?
No, kind of independent this way.
How's the writing coming?
Not so good, Mr. Turner. I've written 5 scripts so far. Every one of them has been rejected. I don't know
What's the matter?
Yeah, well, the reason I called was your dad and I had a talk this afternoon about you. He thought maybe I could pass on a few tips.
Oh, I wouldn't want to bother you.
Ah, no, this isn't an obligation on my part, Lois. I like to help young people. Besides, it's been a long time.
Yes, that's right.
Say, what are you doing this evening?
I was going to wash my hair.
Well, why don't you wash your hair tomorrow evening and come down to my office right away, huh?
Well, I told a girlfriend I'd be home tonight. She was going to drop over.
Can't you call her and tell her to make it some other night? Here's the point. This is the only free night I'll have this week. Things are sort of piling up. And I'd like to see you get something out of your writing the next week or two. Maybe you're doing some little thing and I could sort of straighten you out in the evening.
Well, all right, Mr. Turner.
Huh, fine. You know where my office is?
I don't think so.
That's right across from the broadcasting studios, the Brown Building, room 208.
Yeah, I'll be right over.
Fine, and bring your scripts with you.
I will. I certainly appreciate this.
Not at all. Goodbye.
Bye.
I'll be over in 45 minutes. And bring your scripts with you. I certainly appreciate this. Not at all. You see? That's how people talk, Mr. Avery. Let's see. What else? Oh, yes. Sound. Drawer opens. Gun taken out. Click of breech. Whirl of chamber. Bullets inserted in chamber. 3, 4, 5, and 6. Gun and drawer closed. And now we must wait until... You see, Mr. Avery, fate is a better dramatist than either of us. Just when things start getting dull, the phone rings. Hello?
Hello, Chris? Hank.
Oh, what's up?
I tried your place all night. I tried your sister's place. Finally, I called your office. I wouldn't let myself believe it, but here you are, slaving away for old man Avery again. Hey, when are you going to tell him to go take a flying leap?
I did just that today.
No kidding? Well, congratulations. From here on in, nothing but bigger and better things.
Yeah.
Say, there's a rip-roaring poker game going on over here. Just room for one more sucker. What do you say?
Can't tonight. I'm doing my last show.
Oh, forget it for one night. Why don't you live a little?
Thanks, Hank, but I can't.
I'm coming over there and get you away from that typewriter if I have to use force.
I can't, Hank. The show's Sunday.
I've got a script due tomorrow. You don't see me knocking myself out. Let them wait.
Listen, Hank, you can't come over here. Don't you get it?
Oh, boy. I'm sorry, Chris. Honest, if I'd suspected. Sure thing. My sincerest apologies.
Well, next time, be sharper, will you?
Give her my regards. Hey, anybody I know?
A story conference, that's right.
Yeah. Well, take it easy. Call me for lunch or something.
You bet.
Sorry, kid. Goodbye.
Bye. Well, that was close. Good scene, though. Lois Avery has just driven up in front of the building. She's getting out of the car, carrying her script. She wears a cardigan sweater, tweed skirt, flat shoes. She's young and very pretty, a girl with everything to live for. Now she's disappeared into the building. In a moment, she'll knock on my door. Then you'll see for yourself how youth resists the threat of death. And this, Mr. Avery, would be the proper dramatic moment to end Act One.
And now, a murderous revision. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This is Christopher Turner once again, Mr. Avery, bringing you by transcription the first recording of an actual murder ever made specifically for broadcast. The setting, my office. The music, recorded. The time, night. The victim, yourself. Your daughter has just entered the building, and in a few seconds I'll ask her in. I'm sorry I have to go to such lengths to get you into my office. I'd gladly have killed you in the street, but it's so much more difficult to make a recording there. So concludes the usual resume with which we begin the second act of every Murder, Please program. I hear her footsteps in the hall. Your cue, Lois.
I hope I'm not putting you out. I always tell Dad to stop imposing on my behalf, but I guess he'll never learn.
You're here because I want you here and for no other reason. Cigarette?
No, thanks. This is a nice office.
It serves, just a hole in the wall, but quiet, nothing fancy.
I like it.
How long have you been scribbling?
6 months, Mr. Turner.
Let's just make it crisp. What sort of things?
Murder, mostly. Somebody told me that's what sells best.
True, true. Well, let's just start talking about murder. Maybe something interesting will come out. Question number one. Why do you think people kill?
Lots of reasons, I guess. Money, love, revenge.
Not really. Only for survival. They kill for money only when money means life. Their idea of life. They only kill for love when life depends upon that love. They only kill for revenge when life is intolerable without it, you see?
That's very interesting.
Could you kill?
I don't think so.
Maybe you could. Here. See?
Gun.
And loaded.
Please put it away.
Take it.
No, I'd rather not.
It's very obedient. It won't fire unless you press the trigger. Take it. That's it. Now, point it at me.
Please,
think now. One touch of your finger and you kill me. One little touch. A very delicate instrument, the trigger. There's a sense of power there. Feel it?
I'm afraid.
Fear, yes, but exhilaration, too. Like the second drink.
I feel it, yes.
You can give it back to me now.
I never held one before.
Ever kill anything before?
A few flies around the house.
The fly, yes. Here you see it rubbing its hair-like legs together in the white tablecloth. You pick up the swatter slowly. You stand directly over it. You slap it as hard as you can. You lift the swatter, and there it is, lying on its side, twitching its broken wings.
You make it sound like murder.
It is. So much for the murderer. What about the victim? Afraid of death?
Sometimes. When I think about it.
Ever go to a horror picture and have to walk home alone down a dark side street past an alley you were afraid?
Yes.
That's merely the terror you imagine. But have you ever met death eye to eye?
Once, in the car, Dad was driving. We rounded a curve on the highway. It was raining very hard. We started to skid. We just straightened out in time or we would have gone over the cliff.
Go on.
I was helpless. I didn't want to die.
What is death to you?
Death? I don't know.
No idea?
Emptiness? Blackness? Nothing.
Is that so terrible?
Yes. Because you really don't know.
Like the dark.
That's it.
Do you know any more about death than you do about me?
You?
Yes.
Oh, I... No, you work for Dad.
But you've never spent even 1 hour with me. Once at lunch, you and your father sat down with me, yet you came up here alone. How do you know you can trust me?
Suppose I don't, really.
Look at this.
Please put it down. It makes me terribly nervous.
Do you have any money?
A little.
How much?
$10, maybe. Some change.
Give it to me.
Here.
Why did you give me the money?
Because you asked me for it.
Because you were hoping I'd put down the gun. And if I'd said a kiss, one kiss, and I'll put down the gun, what would you do?
I suppose I'd give you...
But a kiss? That would be harder to give, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Kiss me.
There.
Thank you.
Now put down the gun, please. I know it's a lesson in writing and all that, but it scares me.
No.
But you said you would.
I said nothing of the kind. And if I had said it, you would have been foolish to believe me. You can't trust a man with a gun. You feel helpless, don't you?
Yes.
While you could give me money, there was hope. While you could give me love, there was hope. But if all I wanted was revenge, there would be nothing you could do to save yourself.
Nothing.
And if I told you that right now, this moment, I'm going to pull this trigger and blow you to bits, tell me, what would you say?
Try to talk you out of it?
What would you say?
I don't know what to say.
Then I'd shoot.
I'd tell you about the electric chair.
Very little threat to a man about to kill. Later, perhaps, when he's running away, then he'll think about consequences, but not now. Now it's only kill. What else? What else would you say?
I'd beg him.
He wouldn't listen.
I'd plead with him. I'd say,
Please don't kill me.
And if he still wouldn't listen?
Then I'd die.
Hello?
Bet you don't know who this is.
I can't place the voice.
Try.
I haven't the slightest idea.
Remember San Francisco and the Italian pizza and the cigarette holder?
Vaguely. Who is this? I hate guessing games.
Harriet.
I know at least 18 Harriets. Harriet who?
Crawford.
Oh.
You don't sound so bubbly about it.
I've been working.
Bet you have a girl up there.
What do you want, Harriet?
What do I want? Well, how businesslike can we get? In, I thought maybe you could meet me for a drink. I don't know a single solitary soul in town.
How did you happen to call here?
I shouldn't tell, I suppose, but Hank said you were working late at the office.
Hank, huh?
He gave me the number and said to be sure to call.
Bless his heart.
What was that?
I said, bless his heart.
Well, I'll call you tomorrow.
You do that.
Well, bye.
I guess I'd better get going.
We're not even started yet.
Well, if you don't put down that gun, I'm going. I don't like
it. Sit down. I want to tell you a story.
Now, listen,
please, sit down. This is just a sample plot. You can have it if you want it. It's about a writer who had great novels and in great plays, but he was broke. And for the sake of a place to stay and a meal to eat, he started turning out radio mysteries. He turned them out until every drop of originality was squeezed out of him. And all the greatness he might have been ate into him because he would leave nothing to the world. Nothing but scripts to be swept up by studio janitors after the broadcast. Well, the writer made his decision one day. He would do a last radio play. A radio play with an actual murder. The only chance he had for permanent survival. And he selected as his victim the man who had ground him into the dust. He selected his editor and producer, Ken Avery.
Please.
I like you. I like you very much. I wish this could be happening to almost anyone but you. Get to the phone.
What?
The telephone.
What for?
I'm going to call your father.
No. No, I won't do it.
You'll call your father and you'll tell him to come up to my office. Now pick up the receiver. No, wait. I'll do it. Take the phone. Tell him. It's ringing. Take it.
Dad?
Lois? Lois, what are you calling this time of night for? Is something the matter?
No, nothing.
You want him to take you home. You don't feel well.
Lois, something's the matter. Where are you? Home?
No, I'm at Mr. Turner's.
Turner's? His apartment?
His office. I don't feel very well.
Come and take me home.
Come and take me home. I don't feel well.
Give me the phone. Hello, Ken.
Yes. Chris?
Yes. Lois came up tonight to discuss some scripts she wrote, but she doesn't feel very well. You better come and get her.
I'll be right over.
Sit down. We haven't got very long to wait. Twenty minutes have gone by. Lois sits with folded hands in a straight-backed chair. Her face is white. Her eyes stare at me as if I were the devil himself. Well, perhaps I am. I hear the steps in the hall, the sure, plodding steps of her father, Mr. Ken Avery. The climax, ladies and gentlemen of the listening audience, I address to you. Mr. Avery will never hear this portion of the entertainment. Come in.
Lois, are you... What is this?
Sit down. There's a chair reserved for you.
Lois, what's been going on here?
Tell him, Lois.
He's going to kill you. He's going to kill both of us.
Close the door.
Chris, put that thing down. Somebody's liable to get hurt. What's the matter with you? Drinking again?
Nothing to drink. Very sober. Sit down.
Chris, are you crazy?
Good line. Perfectly in character. The inane cliche from the mouth of the great producer. You see, Ken, everything is being recorded right now. Your voice, Lois's, mine. Sit down.
Recorded for what?
For posterity. For the show next week. You'll have the honor of appearing on your own program as the murder victim. Let me show you here in the desk. You see? a recording machine. I've stopwatched every second. It's been running exactly 25 minutes. You always made it a rule to plan the climax for 26:30 so you could have room for a final commercial. Well, that's just what I'm doing. According to my timing, you have about 1 minute and 30 seconds to live.
All right, Chris, that's enough of the phony dramatics. Give me that thing before somebody gets hurt.
Stand back. I wouldn't want to miss time the climax of the show.
This won't make a show.
You won't have much editorial power, Mr. Avery, after a few seconds.
There's the agency. They wouldn't put this thing on the air.
Why not?
You planned to kill me.
From the beginning.
There's the trouble right there. There's no twist.
Oh, yes, yes, the twist.
Right. Yes, the surprise ending. You told the audience to expect the murder to be successful. But our shows have to have some kind of surprise for the audience, Chris. You know that. Where's the twist?
Still the editor, right? The death store. All right, Ken. Perhaps you can provide the surprise ending that's going to save your life.
I don't have to.
Oh?
You provided the twist yourself, but you didn't know it, and yet the twist was part of the story all the time.
Where, Mr. Editor Avery?
You, Chris. You're the twist.
Me?
You're a flop, Chris. You're so used to dreaming on paper, you can't live anymore. You wrote about love because you never had it. You wrote about fortunes, and you're still two bits. You wrote about murder, but you haven't got the guts to pull the trigger. Now, give me that gun.
You think I won't shoot?
I know you won't. Give me that gun, you hack.
What did you say?
I said you were a hack. Now, give me the gun.
Stay away.
Give me that gun, you hack.
No, I'm not. Let go. Let go of my hand. Drop it. Drop it. Let go. Drop it. Chris. You always liked it. Change the ending.
Dad?
It's all right, Lois.
Dad, take me home.
The records. They'll clear us.
Take me home, please, Dad.
As soon as I see what's on those records. This must be part one. Let's see.
Good evening. This is a recording of an actual murder. The first, as far as I know. Not written, not rehearsed.
Suspense. Suspense is produced and transcribed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lut Gluskin. A Murderous Revision was adapted for Suspense by David Ellis from a story of S. Lee Pogostin.
From January of 1951, it's been Elliot Lewis starring in Suspense and A Murderous Revision. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today, but join us again next week at the same time, and why not invite a friend to listen? Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.